I'd like to welcome everyone to our session tonight, which is entitled Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Your Teenager But Were Afraid to Ask. Well, almost everything. I don't think we're going to reveal everything, but we'll try. I'll be very honest. And it's sponsored by the Holden Miners. And our purpose for having this discussion is to create an environment that's conducive to questioning and some expressing of ideas and generally just to break down the generation gap here in Holden Village. And one of the policies or one of the ideas about having a forum at Holden is not to come up with any earth-shaking answers or any definite conclusions, but rather just to open up and an area for some communication between the kids and their parents. So what we're going to do is we talked about this two different meetings, and there were so many different things that we wanted to talk about. And so we tried to compile them into five basic topics for discussion, and those are listed on the whiteboard and some comments. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have one youth representative is going to give you just sort of a basic overview of what we talked about, really general, some of the things that we meant by this topic, and then opening up the discussion. Now, we encourage questions from all of you, and we're also going to be passing out these slips of paper and then start distributing those if you'd rather put your question on paper. And then I will be reading the questions anonymously, of course, because many of them said they could decipher your handwriting. So I will be reading those at approximately halfway through the session so that you can feel free to ask that one as well. We're all wearing name tags, so it sort of feels funny doing that, but in that way, if you would like to address a certain person or address one of the representative speakers, you can do that, but please feel free to do so. Also, we will be trying to close this forum at 10 o'clock, and a lot of these issues we can continue talking on through the night, but we're going to try to end this at 10. So, with that in mind, I will let Krishna have the floor.
Okay, one of the first things that we came up with was trust, and first thing that came into everyone's mind was that parents don't really trust their kids about curfews. They don't know exactly when they should come in, and the kids think maybe they should be out a little later, and they don't think their parents trust them. It's like we need to have more communication, and we want to have a say in what time we come in.
Do any of you want to add to that? Because we talked about that. What about the Wisconsin kids said that they had?
Well, we have the time curfew as it is.
Yeah.
At walk. But I mean, once you get past the age of 17, I feel like once you get past that age, it, or even maybe before that, another stage, you should be able to communicate with your parents and say, well, if you trust me, then I can be out late, and you don't have to worry about where I am, or I won't get into all this trouble. So it's trust in the system.
Basically, there were some people who disagreed with the time that they thought they should be able to come in at night, and they wanted to have a little bit more negotiation. Is there anything, what about it from a parent's view about deciding what time what time their child should come in at night? And if there isn't an imposed state law, is there a way that you handle that? I want to see you talk about that a little bit.
What healthy things can they be doing after 11 or 12 o'clock at night out?
You set the example, though.
Just say something about what you would be doing with your extended time here and why you think that you should have more time.
Sometimes you're just spending more time with your friends. I mean, in the summer, if you have a job during the day, then you don't get to see your friends during the day, and so your only chance to see them is at night, and you want to spend time with them. You just want to be with your friends. It's not. Yeah.
That's an emotional.
But you do feel there is a time limit that should be established.
Yeah, so we should let you stay up until 8 o'clock in the morning.
If you guys, the way we can handle this is if one of you wants to talk at one time, you can raise your hand. So if you think that there's a reason for a time, but rather than an unlimited amount of time, yeah.
Well, I think maybe that there should be, it should depend, there shouldn't be one set time that you have to come in, because sometimes you might have some activity, say a late night dance, or you're going to be out playing tennis or something in a lighted court. Or else maybe sometimes, you might not want to go out that night, so you really have no reason to go out, or else you get bored and you leave early. So it should just depend on, sometime around, and then if you you're going to be staying out a little later, you could talk to your parents and say, I'd like to stay out an extra half an hour later or something.
I'm assuming you're talking about more or less unchaperoned events, as opposed to lock-ins at a gym where there's a lot of healthy things to do the whole night long because you're in a gym in the Asian area or something. Is that what are we talking about?
More unchaperoned.
Well, one of the other things is that with the curfews, it's when you're at a party or something and you have a curfew and you say 11 o'clock and the party starts at 7 or maybe 8. And if you're having a good time, you don't want to feel rushed, all right, let's get all this stuff in so it can happen before I leave. Mm-hmm. So, if you, I don't know, we're kind of asking the parents if you are flexible with the situation.
Because if you go to a party and you have all this energy and everything and all of a sudden you have to go home. You go home and you have all this energy and your parents keep saying to you, calm down, go to bed. Everybody else is sleeping, you have this energy. Well, it's not our fault because we were at a party. And we were having a good time and you made us come home.
Yay! Your parents here?
There's another issue here, though, besides the trust between parents and children, and it's not maybe not the problem that we don't trust our children, but it's a whole ugly world out there.
What about incrementally?
In small stages.
As you get older, you get more time allowed.
Basically.
What if you're 18 and you're totally corrupted?
If you're married, at least, and other forcing
me. Yeah, oh, so you're not taking your responsibility?
Not if you break the law, no.
Okay.
I mean, we would have probably assumed some responsibility that were justified. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes a child should be allowed to stay in there as a result of direct result.
I think that's up to the child. I mean, that's a learning experience too,
Well, I think if a kid went out, or a teenage adult went out every night, all the time, I think that a set time would be good. But sometimes when kids just go out once in a while, it's nice if they can have a choice of how late they stay. Mm-hmm. That's really nice. Yeah.
So let me take that a little further. What would you recommend a parent do if they allowed you to have a choice as to what time you come in, and you stated you'd be in at a certain time, and the parents agreed that'd be fine, and then you didn't show up for 2 or 3 hours later. Mm-hmm. And that happened 5, 6 times.
I think
you were always 2 or 3 hours later than him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a
next year?
But everyone should.
Wait a minute.
What'd you say?
One first. What would you recommend be done now?
I would cut off their ability to go out and tell them that they have to be in and you can't go out anymore if you're going to do that. Or I'd say, you know, tell them what the story is and that they can't keep doing it. And then, but even so, if they're abusing it, they should, you know, they're probably not doing something that really should be done, or else they're not giving them enough time, like, say, like 9:15 or something, that they come in at, like, 10:30 or something.
So they're
doing well, maybe
maybe more communication is necessary, where maybe they feel like they should be allowed more time. I mean, obviously that's what they feel if they're not coming in when you set a time, unless they're, I don't know, but.
I think he was indicating that
they had agreed to it.
Yeah, I think contract. And we hear one of you guys too. One for, go ahead.
Well, if you agreed to a time and you just kept on, I mean, that's with a lot of other things too. If you keep on disobeying, a punishment usually does follow. I mean, it's not something where, I mean, in my case, personally, I wouldn't expect not to be punished.
The other thing is, what do you define as agreeing to these times? You say, parents say 10 o'clock, and you say 12, and you keep compromising until you end up at 11, so then, I mean, that's agreeing, but so the person may just, maybe I would be saying, oh, then I'll just stop from anyway. I mean, that's the other part. Don't look at me, Bill.
Me? I guess my question was, if we say, what time do you be home, and the child says, I'll be home at 11:30, and the parent says, okay, and they show up at 1:30, and that happens 4 or 5 times in a row, I guess as a parent, I would then exercise some consequences. My question was, what consequences are going to be fair and just and still, you know, have some effect on this?
How about if a kid, or you make an agreement that your kid comes in at 11:30 and they call at 11 and say they'd like to stay out later? Would that be cool?
Maybe when you set the time, you should also set a punishment if they don't come in, so they know what they're getting into.
But see, then that's like assuming that they're going to do, you know, be bad to begin with. Instead of having a positive, you're starting right out with the negative. You're assuming that we're going to, you know, do something wrong. I mean, I can see that too, but.
Well, after you find that the person has done something wrong, I mean, he's saying after 4 or 5 or 6 times.
Just so they
know.
That way, and
I'll
trip on the rocket
from
the
plane
to the ground.
Yeah,
well,
I
that's it. Yeah. Well, as a parent who does appreciate having your teenage daughter call, that is usually quite acceptable to us. I think, though, it depends on how much later and how often that happens. Occasionally, and with good reason, yes, but it would happen night after night, and there would have to be other negotiating going on. The question I wanted to ask all the kids is, why do you think parents ask for curfew? You know, is everybody over 35 out to get you? Or are there reasons that you see for being given a curfew?
Yeah,
I
one of you
want to address that? Yeah?
Just speaking for myself. I think that's a good thing. I mean, I know everybody, all their parents care about the kids, and I think that's great. And I know that you're worried about us, and that's cool. I understand. But I didn't have anything to say against that, because that's morality, and you have to deal with that with your kids.
What about with the state? What is the reason behind the state regulation that all children under 17 are in?
I think that's just the safety for the kids off the streets. But I think you can be in somebody else's house after that, or be in a car.
Okay.
Well, not necessarily a car, because I've known people who have been 17-year-olds who have been with maybe 16, 17, who have been with like 18, 19-year-olds, but the 18, 19-year-olds will get picked up also. So it's like, it's once you get past the curfew point, you're still responsible, because if you get caught with the people underage or something like that, it's your fault also.
Okay. Why don't we, does anyone else have anything really important to say regarding curfew? Why don't we move on to the topic of labeling, and Tanya's going to explain a little bit about what we meant by that.
Okay, when we talked about labeling yesterday, a lot of different things came up that sometimes deal mostly with within the school, kind of, I suppose. And that's with like different styles and what is it,
clothing,
hair and music, and also being labeled because of the people that you hang out with, who your friends are. And sometimes it's a bad label, maybe it's a good label. Also, another thing we talked about with labeling had to do with the generation gap, with parents making comparisons between themselves and their child. And we kind of thought that we were an individualized generation, and sometimes that's not appreciated, the comparison. Also, with emotions, with having one of your parents or both of your parents, whatever, having them label your emotions, like they think you have one certain state of mind, and they express that to you, like suppose you're angry or something, and they say, well, you're really angry right now, aren't you? And maybe you weren't feeling so angry, but then once they say it, you kind of feeling like, well, I suppose I should feel angry, you know, and you start to feel angry. Kind of, that's mostly what we talked about with labeling of emotions.
Let me add to that also, in that I remember hearing you guys talk about how like a lot of times if there's any sort of vandalism or something that's done to an area or something in a neighborhood, it's immediately blamed on the teenage youth. And, you know, I mean, it could be a lot of different people, or it could be, you know, different incidents, and it could be one specific individual. But a lot of times that comes off as a reflection on a whole group of kids. They feel a little bit, you know, they feel really bummed out by being labeled like that, and being collectively labeled. Do any parents have?
I'd like to ask if you find that you label yourself. I worked with teenagers this last year in Seattle, and they have 5 different labels, categories you can fall into. Do you find that you label yourself? I don't know where you're from.
Well, I don't know. I think teenagers have, when they're growing up, they have their own view of themselves, so they kind of do label themselves. But when another label comes in that they don't see as themselves, or maybe that they think is totally wrong, which it might be also. Like, we're discussing, like, if you hang around with a bunch of, say, I don't know, well, go to a far extent, people who take drugs, all right, and you don't, you're automatically with them, you know, and even though you know that you don't, people falsely label you as being, you know, say, like, if you take drugs or something like that, like everybody else does. So yeah, we have our own labels, but then when others like falsely put another one in, that's sort of upset.
You guys also mentioned something I remember about the fact that a lot of times I have a reflection on your relationships with adults, parents, teachers, and coaches, and stuff like that, and that if they believe that you hang out with certain groups and you're that type of person, that can really affect the way maybe your parents relate to you, and teachers relate to them, and coaches and things like that. Do you think that you find yourself as an adult, if a kid is dressed in a certain way, or you know he has a wild haircut, or he dresses in a really different way, you find that you automatically, you know, have a certain perception of that child or that kid? What do you think? Yeah.
There was a particular person that I met, and my first response was,
I took a deep breath. I was kind of scared of this person. And we kind of developed a relationship because underneath what I saw was a real human being with some needs and some wants and some talents. And just wanting to claim some difference. But it didn't last for all the time. And when I taught, I know I had a student that came up one day with a boy, and he had a gold earring. And he said, "What do you think?" You know, I was supposed to be shocked. And I said, "Gee, what's gold to me?" Yeah, it was real depressing for one another. I hadn't capitulated. But I think that's as natural as any of us doing crazy things as adults. Some of us have really funny t-shirts. They say hilarious things. I don't know why that's any different than them.
What about your own son or daughter decided to come home with a mohawk one day?
Well, that's happened already. A semi-mohawk. I don't like it on him. I think he looks kind of green. And I protested. So the compromise is a modified mohawk. Isn't that what it's called? Yeah, not real.
Tanya?
What about if your kid had a group of friends, well, kind of like what Kirsten said about with the drugs or something, but, well, maybe not drugs, but the friends your kid hung out with, you didn't approve of them, and do you think that because you didn't approve of their friends, maybe you would limit their relationship with them in the sense where you wouldn't let them go out with them as much? That's labeling in a sense also. I mean,
how would you like it if your mother or father hung out with a group of prostitutes there at alcohol? How would you feel about that? Would you label your parents as that, or would you accept that for them?
Label my parents as prostitute or alcohol?
Well, because we would hang around with those groups of people. Would that concern you at all? Would that worry you?
Yeah, it would concern me, I think.
Okay. Well,
but I mean, it's a little different from my point of view. I can't say, "No, Ma, you can't go hang out with your prostitute
friend."
But that's
a concern that we would have. that's kind of a far out example, but it's a concern that we have as parents when we know you would move with people that maybe would tempt you, or you'd be in a situation where you could get into trouble. Maybe you wouldn't take drugs, but maybe you'd be in a situation with people that are taking drugs where you could get into trouble. It's potentially dangerous. Okay, Dave?
That's why you need to let the kid choose for himself. If he wants to be with them, fine. It'll be all right. But if the kid wants to have that stuff, you need to get them out of there or something. Why can't those guys? But if you just want to be playing, hanging around with them and just have a good time with them, that's all right. Well, not yet.
Yeah.
How do we know the difference, Dave?
That's hard to say there.
How do you know the difference between what? If your kid is involved?
Yeah.
In the case of the prostitutes and the alcoholics, if the parents are hanging around with, how often does the kid say, "All right, I'm putting my foot down, you're not going out with
me"? That's what you do as teenagers. You take these things that we say and you blow them up. I just use that as an example, but you're getting very defensive on that. Okay. All right, one person talking at a time, please.
And with the example that you gave, you know, with parents and with the kids starting to be concerned about the parents, I mean, if the parents are going to hang out with a certain kind of people that, like, maybe is not good to the kids' point of view, then they're the models for the kids. So the parents really can't, I'm not saying they can't, because if the kids are hanging out with some of like a, kind of like in a parallel sort of group that the parents are hanging out with, then it kind of runs both ways. So, I mean, if the parents are the models for the kids growing up, then it kind of crumbles.
Yeah.
How do we know if a label is something that's acceptable to deal with or not? I could give you some labels like honorable students. Is that, how do you let us know that something that we're associating you with is not acceptable or is acceptable?
Well, yeah, basically you ask your child, and sometimes that helps because it's straightforward and you can just answer. But sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, I don't know what you do in that case. But I think the easiest way would be to ask, because there are some people with honor roll, some people don't take that as a compliment or as a good label.
Well, we're not thinking about it, and we just associate something you with something that you say is not true. How are you going to let us know that we made a quote from a mistake?
I mean, why must you label though? I mean, is there a real reason for that?
I guess what he just said is what I was doing. I think most of us as adults resent labels as much as we can. I don't want to be labeled as over 50 or anything else. I hate labeling because it makes me less than the individual. And I wish we could remember that more, because I know I'm guilty of what I'm saying. But I really wish we would. You like that?
I think it's very important that we all of us, both adults and young adults, that in terms of labeling, you're dealing with two different entities. One is labeling the person, and the other is labeling the behavior of the person. So let's not get caught in the trap of assuming that when we inadvertently or intentionally label something, that we're labeling the person. When we may in fact be labeling the behavior. There's a difference. If I recognize the behavior of a group of people as being unacceptable by God's standards particularly, then I'm going to be concerned. I'm going to be concerned about the behavior. I still will love or attempt to love that person, but separated from the behavior of the person.
Give me an example of a label of behavior of that person.
Well, one of these people here has one just as good girl. I mean, you could have some friends as an example, like go out and drink. Drinking, obviously, I'm talking about alcoholic beverages. Drinking an alcoholic beverage is obviously a behavior. And it would be my tendency to attach some label of sort to that activity, to that behavior. But I've got to, as a parent, I've got to exercise caution in labeling the behavior, not necessarily the people. In other words, I wouldn't want my child hanging around with a group of people consistently who drink alcoholic beverages. Why? Because I dislike the behavior and I'm afraid or I'm concerned of the influence of that behavior. Now, those same people, regardless of what they look like, whether they have mohawks or wherever the case may be, if those same people did not behave in that fashion, if they did not drink alcoholic beverages, then I wouldn't have any reason to be concerned, and therefore did not come up with any label process at all.
Well, I think these are all touchy situations, but you know, I think all of this goes back to initial communication and bond between your kid. And you know, when you talk to your kid, you got to know your kid before you let them delve into these situations. You can't just, things just don't come up because you more or less think you know your kid. And I think it's all communication and it's trust. And you got to know your kid before all these things come up, because I think that's important. You know, I mean, if your kid is hanging around with people who smoke, and you know that your kid
doesn't like smoking, and you've asked him about it, and it's clear you trust your kid in that. But if you find out that your kid is smoking, well, that's another thing. But I think there should be that trust, and I think that's a very important thing, because if that's broken, then you have a, you know, you may have a rebel on your hands, or, you know, you may just be making a big mistake and doing something really great. That's a big thing, and I think for all these really big situations like sex and drugs, there should be a common bond between parents and kids.
Okay, I think that's a good place to move on to our third discussion, because we're going to be going into drugs and alcohol. Michael, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I was
going to
say that if the kids are on the people that smoke, they feel like they're smoking themselves before they're ready. Not because he's just bringing in the smoke.
Okay, we're going to move on to the subject of money. And remember your questions, because at the end, when we covered these five that we want to cover, you can ask more questions.
May I make one comment?
Yeah, sure.
In defense of the kid, when I was growing up, my mother didn't like one of my friends. And I didn't know that all the time. And she did say, she didn't stop me, but she did say that she didn't really like this person that I was. I was still allowed to have a friendship with him. Nothing ever came of it. But it was my mother's expression of what she thought would make a good friend for me. And I know that sometimes we do that with our kids. We start making preferences, and I think what the fellow said back here is valid. You have to begin making your friendship. And I suppose what I hear him saying as well is that there has to be a relationship so that we help you, and I don't mean we're from on high, but we help you to sort some things out. And that isn't to say that you can't do some of that yourself. So.
But we have some things to talk about with regard to that too, when we talk about relationships also. So, would you like to talk about money?
Sure. I wasn't there, but from what we discussed last night, some people thought, as pertaining to money, and that the kids that, or the parents, where they don't make any money themselves, and the parents give them money. Some of them thought that they don't have enough money, and that's how they felt. And no, a lot of them, I guess some kids had just stuff about allowances and just things about that they'd like to probably discuss them more with their parents than just having them set. So the parents could understand why they want the money. And a lot of some kids also who work and make their money don't like the idea of their parents making them choosing to put their money in certain places, like in the bank, when they can't, instead of having their own free choice. And that's what they talk about.
Sure. Saving money and putting it in the bank and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'll just say, I'm going to college in the fall, and I know that I need every penny that I've saved, and I know that, you know, if my parents haven't said, well, you know, I'll save some up and all that kind of stuff, you know, I know halfway through the year I'm going to be running out of money anyway. But just having them said, you know, save for college, and always nagging me about that, I'm sure it's going to help me. And I know that some people may not be realizing that now, but I'm realizing it right now, and it's worth it.
Shouldn't a child choose where he wants to put the money? I mean, I really can't, especially where the child earns it. I can't see how the parents, I mean, the children don't exactly decide what, I mean, how you spend your money. With some All right, well, I mean, granted, food is love, and you know,
if there's a cooperation in the budget planning, and it's two ways in the family structure of the budget, then I think the parents have some legitimate right to ask that a portion of the earnings be saved and not be spent. But that requires that there's some active participation, I think, on the youth in the family to say, who may feel, well, gee, you know, we never do anything fun. Okay, the family budget movie money, or your budget membership at the Y, or, you know, and things that you want, and maybe we don't know that we can afford them or that we want as much as you would want, but that it's a high value for you, and there's some sense of fairness about it, that you would feel would be fair as well as we would feel would be fair. And it's not an easy process of, you know,
all right, with allowances getting from the parents, all right, yeah, save part of it. But, like, say if the kid goes out, like, get a lawnmower job, but, like, $2-$3. Now, he should be free to do what, with that money he earns himself, how, without parents, or what he wants to do with that.
Are you saying, though, that the allowance, if the parents did some of that be saved, or
yeah,
saved for gifts or whatever,
yeah,
then that you'd have kind of like pin money? Kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't think that's unreasonable. I'm speaking for myself. That's all good. Yeah.
Speaking for myself, I make my own money, and my parents take a portion of it, and I don't disagree with that. Sometimes I don't get the portion that I need to get to them, but they're understandable. But I, for one, I buy comic books. And
are you a collector?
Yeah. And it's an expensive thing. Mm-hmm. And they look at that, I don't know how exactly they look at it, but I look at it as an investment, because they can be worth a lot of money. You know? So I was thinking, and they're a lot of fun to read too. So it's really but, you know, I don't have any problems with my parents getting my money, because I have enough to spend, and I don't buy little class and things. If you have things that, if you don't sell me, you want to buy it, fine, but if it's legit, then that's fine too. They put it into college.
Okay. Why do you think the parents would want you to save a portion of what you make?
Are you asking me?
Whoever.
Oh.
Right answer.
Well, because they care about you, they want you to, like, be happy and have a good life.
Yeah. They don't think if they want, you know, what you're making isn't that much, maybe you're trying to set up a healthy set of pattern to pay yourself first. You know, instead of spending.
Can I just find out how many kids have a clothing allowance that you can tell me is probably something in our family that hasn't been resolved yet? How many of you kids, let's say, get X number of dollars and you're told, that's it. Now, you can spend that on clothes any way you want, and it's your money, but if you spend it all on a pair of guest jeans and $50 boots, then you don't get any more money. How many of you have clothing allowance like that?
That would be
Oh, okay, yeah. That means how many of you would like a clothing allowance? Realizing that then you can't come to mom and dad and say, but it would be responsible and beneficial. Okay, does anyone else have any more questions?
Yes. When I think of allowance, well, as I've been raised with a little in our family, my allowance, I get the choice to spend it the way I want to. And the money that I earn, babysitting or doing odd jobs, whatever like that, that is the money that I take a portion of and save in the bank. And then the rest I can also do what I need or what I want with it. But also I've been given the guidelines as to, you're making money now. If you want something and you don't really need it, well, we're not going to pay for it. If you just want it, you buy it. And it has to be your money. Don't expect us to pay for it.
How is it decided between one and two? Is there a negotiation?
Well, mostly I make up the decision for myself, because then if I don't want to spend my money on it, then I just don't get it.
Okay. Wait, go for me.
I'm Brad. Well, like Carly said, how I use money, right? So during the winter, I worked two jobs, and I wrote my mom and dad. They never took my money, they never will.
Relationships and, you know, just friendship relationships.
that the thing that everybody seems to sort of have a consensus on is that it's our choice who our friends are. I mean, sure, you can sit there and say, well, you know, you're hanging out with the bad crowd and all that kind of stuff, but we're the ones that have to find out that they're the bad crowd, because if you guys just say, oh, they're awful, get away from them, you know, we're just going to rebel or whatever and say, nope, they're great people. And then maybe 2 months on down the line or something like that, to find out, yeah, these people aren't so great after all, but then we don't want to admit it to you that you were right. I mean, you have to let us find out on our own. It's just like, it's the same classic example as when you're a little kid and say, don't touch that hot stove. Well, we're going to go right ahead and touch it anyways. I mean, I think there's a certain amount you have to let us do that with our friends.
And for me, I'm with you.
I agree with that 100%.
I mean,
I'll think there's a point at which you, as a parent, are not going to let your child experience, such as when my children wanted to dial off the front of the best thing to try. I'm not going to say, well, see what the bumper feels like. And I guess my question is, where is the line when, and at what point does the parent know when they ought to intervene and say, hey, this is really dangerous. More dangerous than playing around with.
Well, I think the dangerous things the kids won't want to say readily, well, let me try it first. You know, like, because they also have sense. I mean, they're not going to stick a gun to their head and say, let's see if it goes off. And they pull the trigger because they know what's going to happen. And if they can use their own judgment in the things where it's dangerous, I mean, because, you know, when your parents warn you, all right, now don't do this, it might be dangerous. You know, you feel, mom, dad, you're stupid, I know this, you know. And, not stupid, I didn't mean to say that. But,
you talked about that.
Yeah. But some things, like, you have to let, I mean, you know, you're right when you have to say, you know, like, warn them in certain ways. Like, if they, you know, when younger kids, they don't know, that's obvious. You know, it's a dangerous thing. So as they get older, you know, what am I trying to say? I said,
you need to keep
yeah. Repeating.
What if they do those things?
What if they do them?
Mm-hmm. How about drinking and driving? How about?
Well, then they're suffering the consequences. They took the risk, and that's wrong. I mean, that's what I feel. Is what?
What about when the consequences have, effect on the parents, like the child dies?
Well,
don't parents also suffer?
Yeah. I mean, if the kid is doing something wrong, then everybody suffers. The kids, the parents, friends around them. And, you know, I'm not sure. Well, I think the kids, most of them, I don't mean to say this, but kind of really negative. I think most of them really know what they're getting into when some of them do it. I mean, when they drink, they know what's probably going to happen if they drink too much. Or if they smoke too much, they know what's going to happen. And the parents, yeah, I mean, I can understand that they try and help. The help, you know, when the parents are concerned and everything.
Yes.
I'm real curious. How much is too much?
Too much? Well, I don't drink myself, and you know I think anything is just too much.
Why don't we read what we had? What we discussed about that, Kirsten. In fact, that was your topic as far as drugs and alcohol. We sort of combine these two, because I'd like to get to the questions that are written down.
Well, the drugs and alcohol, we found the problem wasn't that we take it. That we drink it and we have problems with it, but the parents become maybe like they always think that teenagers will at one time in their life do it, and that isn't always true. They always, because when you go out to parties, you know, parents say before you go, don't take any drugs, don't take any alcohol, you can say no and everything like that, and that's, you know, sure, that helps a lot, but it just gets kind of annoying sometimes when the kid knows that he or she is not going to do it, and it's just that the overall feeling with the parents is that they have this idea that everything is pro.
With teenagers, with drugs and alcohol. But, yeah.
Well, that's what I said. Some of us parents have this scenario that we are, that many parents almost promote this part of teenagers to actually open up their homes and bars for teenagers. So almost the reverse. So, again, our culture, our time of life, and almost kind of a communication that we have in our house, and we have alcohol too. So that's a concern that certainly we live with, which I think then puts an additional burden on the teenager that's trying to make this decision, or the giving adult approval.
Okay.
Do you want to
give up that? Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that the most top reason that kids smoke or drink is because of that everybody else is doing it, and they think it's like cool or something. And like I have a friend, and she does it because she thinks it's really cool to do it. And so she asked me if I want to do it, and I don't think it's really cool. And so then I'm uncool if I don't do it.
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah, well, I mean, I mean, I really don't drink, but, you know, you can do it just for fun, too. I mean, we don't, I mean, I can't honestly say that I think it would be fun, right? If they do it for fun, they don't do it. I mean, it's not always pure pressure. Sometimes they do make that own decision. I think it's their parents' responsibility to try and teach them that, I mean, that it's the wrong way to have. Not necessarily, but, you know, just to guide them.
Yeah.
Why do you think
teenagers
love acceptable decisions with alcohol as well? I mean, essentially that's what's happening. How do you find out what happens? Where do you think that ought to happen? How do you think it now? Or do you think that shouldn't happen? Period.
Yeah.
I don't want to touch that person.
Well, I've seen people at a party who have been drunk. And from my own point of view, I haven't liked what I've seen. And so observing it has kept me away from it. I mean, sure, I've been curious as to what it's like to be drunk and so forth. But after seeing somebody who has been completely buzzed and drunk, it's kept me away from it because I don't like what I'm seeing and I don't want to act the way that they are acting. And sure, I don't know, maybe that isn't how I would act, but because I see someone else acting that way, I kind of get that impression.
Yes, I don't mean getting drunk. I mean sort of, I mean, we live in a society that alcohol is consumed in probably by a large number of people even within this confines. Nobody's standing here saying, at least I haven't heard it yet, that alcohol should be forbidden for the rest of your life. The question is, how should it be introduced and where and at what point?
I think the parents should introduce it to the children, and then they can bring it up, like say that they're having some wine, and the kid can try some and see if they like it, and then they can decide from there if it's something that they want to do.
What age do you think is appropriate for that?
I don't know. Whatever. I don't really have any idea about that.
I think the age would go with how the person, you know, how mature the person is. You know, like if you have a really mature 10-year-old and you say, here, we're having spaghetti tonight, you know, we're having Italian wine, taste it, you know, then, you know they're mature enough to handle it. But if they're not a mature 10-year-old, or I'm just picking 10 as an age, okay? If they're not a mature 10-year-old, then I think you should just wait until you think they are mature enough.
Right in the back?
There's a, I think there's an implicit paper. There's things being applied, and that's that. They will all be breakers at one time in the future, even if only they're social members.
There's a possibility.
I think the times are changing now in the sense that it's perfectly acceptable at this point to go to a party at which drinks are being served and you say, no, I'd rather not. That's perfectly acceptable now. So I think it's a good chance that many of these teenagers here may never be social drinkers.
Okay.
This is Corey.
Plus, it's really easy for us to stay right here and now that we're not going to drink. But when you're faced with the actual situation, you do not know what decision you're going to make.
But, well, that seems to be an old cop-out of teens anyway. I mean, I feel that, you know, that, I mean, peer pressure is really, I would never, you know, if I had the choice, I would try not to fall in with
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Well, if you had that 10-year-old child, he's actually a newsman, and then his younger brother, the parents didn't think he was mature enough to drink until he was 15.
Okay, we'll talk to Kathy.
So, Kathy, I think there's a real difference between having a taste of your parents' wine with spaghetti afternoon, no matter what age you are, and going to a wild party where people are drinking a lot of beer. And I've been at the college dorms, and it is absolutely insane. Okay, on the weekend. I'm a little bit older, but still, I'm teenager. And, I think that's an important point, too, that it's not just the alcohol, and it's not just whether you tasted alcohol or not, and whether you, I mean, I don't like alcohol, so I don't drink. And I don't believe in getting drunk and throwing up on the floor or throwing up anywhere, which is a lot of what goes on at the parties that I've seen. But I do think it's important to, I mean, these are like vastly different things, even though they taste alcohol. And I think it's something that should be recognized.
Okay, Amy? I had a friend of really cool parents, and I thought my parents were pretty cool about it too. And they just, as far as the time and the place, they said, we'd rather have you drinking at home. So, because they knew that I was going to drink, because I was a wild and rebellious kid. But,
different now. So they were in sync with my friend's parents and stuff, and they said, okay, fine, if you're going to drink, please drink at home. And so, like, me and my friends would get together, and we'd, like, I mean, we wouldn't do it right in front of them or anything, but it was okay, because they said, as long as you're at home, you're not going to be out there driving and killing people on the highway. And, I mean, that's very important and valid thing to do, and they knew that I was going to do it.
Okay. Yes.
I like that idea, but what did the parents of your friends say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of my friends' parents felt the same way.
And they gave them permission to drink at your house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You cannot do that in Wisconsin, though. Mm-hmm. It's illegal.
Right.
But
yeah.
As generous and kind-hearted as it sounds, mm-hmm. and mature, even taking the responsibility of driving for a friend's home, or whoever's friend's home, would still be illegal.
The question is that mature.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were saying that. Okay, I have to get it.
Okay, I think that we could have an entire session on alcohol and drugs, and I think that a lot of the questions that you parents have may be alcohol-related. So if we could just have some of those questions, we'd like to send those forward, if any of you did have questions. If not, we can continue, but we usually try to get out of here by 10.
I have one question.
in terms of teenagers, we haven't talked about. I think, I don't know if many of you are here by force, or all of you chose to come to Holden, or if you have some concerns about going with parents on trips or places, and how do we arrive at decisions, and when it's time not to always go with the close family and so forth. Was that a concern or not when you talked about that?
Well, they're all here by force.
They're all here by force.
Do any of you want to address that? What do you guys think
about? I hear that.
I guess when I have the kids, if I really didn't want to go, I kind of want to go. As far as coming to Holden, I want to go to Holden. Going on family trips, you know, it's fine. If I didn't, you know, really want to go, I'd say so, and possibly some other arrangements to be made.
Okay. Can I say something?
Yeah.
I just think about that.
These days, I don't know. It's the same with my family. We don't really have a choice. I mean, if the parents are going to play like in a family vacation for like a month or so, the kids go along. I mean, if it's a destination that they need to go to, see like Holden, you know, I protested going for a month. I mean, we're gone for a month away from home. And, you know, I protested and everything, but there was nothing that I could do. And so, like, I don't know, it seems like parents end up in this situation, you know, where the kids try and have some output to try and persuade. You know, they probably can persuade sometimes. Not often. And, but it just seems like parents always seem to have the last word in it.
Okay.
Personally.
One last comment. I know my situation is a lot different than most parents because the parents are on staff here and I was here last winter. And when I was asked if I wanted to come here, I know either if I said yes or no, though my opinion was important, still what their opinion was pretty much what was going to, you know, their say was going to, yeah, they were going to, they said was going to go, but I still had an option on how it was going to be decided.
Okay, I would like to end with these two questions. They're both good questions. The first one is, thank you. The first one is, I hear, I'll shuffle these around.
Okay, the first one is, I hear the group saying, we want to make all our own decisions.